Welcome to the Sporting Spotlight here on Dublin City FM with me, Breffni Early. This week's guest is none other than James Klusky, Ireland's top tennis doubles player. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about how you started out in tennis. Where are you from? What's your background?
Well, I'm from Swords. I started when I was about 7 years old. My mom actually played a little bit of tennis in school years and years ago. I have a brother and sister. They played a little bit. I was the youngest in the family. I started playing in Swords, and then, you know, I obviously enjoyed the sport, got more and more into it. Then I played the tournaments under 10, did relatively well, got selected for Leinster squads, and then gradually I just obviously got more and more into the sport. And then when I was 14, there was a Canadian coach who came. He lived in Dublin. He worked in, and Westwood Clontarf opened, and there was 7 indoor courts there, so that was a big help for us. That
meant you didn't get cold, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, it's obviously tough to play tennis outside, and to train indoors on a really good surface there, and had a great gym and great facilities and a great coach. So he created a program, an environment that we were able to train in, and it kind of grew from there. So I played there, and it got more serious. Then we practiced before and after school and 6 days a week, and then that led on to when I was 18. I went to college in America for 4 years, a sports scholarship, as a lot of the tennis guys do. So I spent 4 years there in Louisiana, which was a great 4 years as well.
Okay, let's come back to that in a few minutes. But first, tell me a bit about your family. Many brothers and sisters?
One brother, one sister, both older.
Okay, you're the baby then.
Yeah, I'm the baby, yeah. So I was the one who really got into the tennis. So actually, in tennis in general, in the world, you have a lot of, like, there's a lot of, in sport in general, I suppose there's a lot of pushy parents, you know, parents who are really into, you know, like, especially in tennis, you can have a pushy father, a pushy mother or something, but in my case, I didn't have that at all. My dad is not really into tennis at all. Like, he's into, you know, he watches Gaelic or horse racing, stuff like that. So my mom does have a little, I mean, she played a little bit in school, but nothing serious or anything, and she watches tennis on TV, but she, you know, they wouldn't have come to many of my matches and stuff like that. It was more kind of my drive, but they were there to support me, and they helped me along the way. So
yeah, I suppose we'd have known stories of Andy Murray's mother has famously been heavily involved in his development also.
Yeah.
If you've read Andre Agassi's book, I don't know if you did, his dad would have been very much a pushy parent. Would you say that's maybe held you back in the sport?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think for every Judy Murray and for every parent that's helped, I think there's hundreds that have been, you know, a big hindrance. You know, I've seen a lot of players around the world where they're, you know, they have very pushy parents, and it just doesn't work. The people, they don't enjoy the sport, and so I wouldn't really agree with that. But like, yeah, Judy Murray has been instrumental in Andy's career, and my mom has been instrumental in my career, but just in a different kind of way, not in a pushy way. She's, you know, if I lose in a foreign country, and, you know, the first person who says to me, you know, there's always next week or whatever it is, she always kind of pushes me on. So it's kind of a different way of looking at it.
Okay, so let's bring it back to, you just finished your leaving cert, and you've been offered an opportunity to go to Louisiana.
Yeah.
What's gone through your head at that time? Are you thinking maybe moving away, or was staying at home an option?
Well, at the time, to play tennis and stay at home, it wasn't an option. The coach who I was working with from when I was 14 to 18, well, 14 to probably 17, Larry Jurevich, a Canadian coach, he always kind of, in Ireland, we have such a small pool of players that there's a lack of matches, that, you know, you don't get to compete against a lot of players, whereas he always saw it as a really good option to go to America to play college, because you continue your education, everything's taken care of, you know, your equipment, your rackets, clothes, everything, the coaching is good, and you play a ton of matches. So that was always the option, and that was, I wanted to play tennis, and it was always my goal to play tennis and to play Davis Cup and do all that sort of stuff. And for me, that was what I had to do, was go to America, and I was excited about it. I mean, obviously I was nervous as well about leaving home and stuff, but I was excited, and it proved to be a good 4 years.
America, the collegiate system over there, the NCAA system, does get a lot of stick about potentially being too intense, too many games, overusing the athletes, kind of running from tournament to tournament to tournament, not actually doing what's best for the athlete, but rather maybe what's best for the profile of the program or the profile of the school. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Like, I think for me personally, what I did before I went was, there has been Irish guys who've gone in the past, and I had friends who'd been there, and I talked to people, and I took the step that I was recruited by a good few places to go and play, and instead of not visiting, I actually took, they pay for your recruiting trip to come over, so I went, and I went to three different colleges, I met the coaches, I saw the facilities, and as best I could with my coach Larry, at the Canadian guy, we both went over, as best I could at the time, I made my decision. And
what were the options?
I ended up at LSU, Louisiana State University, which was big school in the SEC. I don't know if you're familiar with the, but it's basically a massive sports school where the American football is number one in the country, and baseball is usually number one, track is number one, and tennis was, we were top 10. So I could have gone to Indiana in Bloomington. I had a friend of mine, Darren McLaughlin, who was playing at that college, so that was an option as well. They were recruiting me. And I went to Pepperdine as well in Malibu, so could have gone there. I should have probably gone there.
But it's 2.5 men on the beach.
But I don't think my
never
tennis.
Never pick up a racket at all.
Yeah, that was the issue. I don't think my tennis would have blossomed there.
You mentioned Darren McLaughlin. There were other players around the same generation as yourself, the likes of Colin O'Brien, James McGee. How close are the four of you?
Oh, we'd be very close. Yeah, I mean, Dara, when myself, James, and Dara were kind of. The three of us were coached individually by Larry Jurevich, the Canadian guy, and like, I don't think it's a coincidence that McGee has, you know, gone on to be, he's 280 now in singles, and he's going to push on from here because he's playing really well and he's doing really well. And, you know, I'm 200 or it was 180, or and Dara went to a really good tennis college and, you know, got a really good degree from tennis, and Larry was a big influence on that, and tennis is an individual sport, but what he did was, we had a group of players, he instilled a kind of a team aspect to it. He used to say that if it's a small country, a player is not going to break through on their own. Usually a group is going to come together. So you can kind of see, like, you know, if you look at Conor Nyland, when he was, you know, with his Wimbledon and all that sort of stuff, when he made the breakthrough in that, I said to him, like, it's had a massive impact on the other players, and especially me, because I see, you know, I practice with Conor, and I see, you know, he's good, but I mean, I can get to that level, or I can be that level, and it kind of pushes everyone on. So, and as a group, we were really close. We all went to Belvedere, myself, James, and Colin, or and myself, James, and Dara. So we'd still, you know, I talked to James today. We'd still keep in contact, and we try and play as many tournaments at the same places, because. Another aspect is just having someone from your own country at a tournament. It helps, you know, the cultural thing. Colin, I travelled with Colin a little bit, and we played doubles. We used to play doubles a lot, and we won the Irish Open in 2010, I think. So we've had some really good memories, and we played Davis Cup together and everything. So as a group, I think the Irish guys are probably one of the closest you'll see, because there's so few of us. You know, if you look at the French and the British, there's so many of them that... You know, it's a little bit different, whereas the Irish guys are a very close-knit group. So.
Okay, well, tell us a bit about how the actual life of a professional tennis player works. It's not quite what we see on the TV screen. You're not Andy Murray's, your Nadal's, your Federer's, your Djokovic's. It's a very different lifestyle that you lead.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
There's no private jets, for example.
No, a few Ryanair flights, more so. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You're on the road a lot, like you're... I mean, I think last year I did 30 weeks away, so... and again, the Irish aspect is, you know, if you're French or German or something, you can play tournaments in your own country, and then, you know, you lose a bad match, you can drive home, whereas if you're us and you're in a foreign country and you lose, you know, you have to get a flight home, or it's a little bit different. So it's tough, it's a lonely sport, you know. Yeah, I travel alone a lot, but it's rewarding as well, you know. You see your ranking pushing on when you're doing well, and you know, when you play Davis Cup and all that sort of stuff. So it is rewarding, but it is a tough life. And I think people have a misconception about, you know, they see Murray and all these players. It's not really like that. I mean, you know, it's tough flying for me. I'm 6'6". It's pretty tough on a you know, small plane, and then you arrive, and then you have to play maybe a day or two later, and trying to keep fit and healthy. So, but I wouldn't, you know, I don't talk negative. Like, it is, the rewards are great as well, and you're following your passion, and it's your dream, and that's what I want to do. So, I wouldn't do it if I didn't want to.
Yeah, talk us through, I suppose, your participation in any given event. Say, event starts Monday, runs right through to the Sunday. What's your movement around that?
Okay, so I'm going to France. I would probably arrive, depending on flights and how expensive the flight is, I would arrive Saturday, try and arrive Saturday afternoon, try and get a practice in when I arrive just to get used to the court. Sunday, sign in for doubles, because obviously I'm playing doubles, so sign in for doubles, practice with my partner, and then practice twice Sunday. And then you would either play Monday or Tuesday. So you'd wait. If you're playing Monday, obviously you get ready to play the next day. So if you're winning, then you play back to back. If you lose, then one of the things that's tough is, you know, if you play some tournaments, it's plus H. So if I'm in the tournament, the hotel is taken care of from Saturday. They pay for the hotel. But if I lose, say I lose on the Monday and I have a tournament the week after, I have to pay for the hotel from Tuesday. So that's kind of added pressure to try and stay in the tournament. But if you also look at the flip side, is a lot of tennis, but a lot of guys try and help you out. So for example, like I lost in Sarajevo, but I couldn't change my flight. So Dustin Brown, one of the players, he said, "Yeah, I have a room. There's another bed, because you're entitled to a twin room." So he let me stay in his room until I left, and you know, vice versa. If my friend had lost, I would have said, "You can stay in my room." So guys do help you out.
Yeah, I suppose the perception of a professional sports person, we read about the papers, whether it's a footballer or a rugby player, is that they've got lots and lots of money and that everything is looked after. That's really not the case. It is pretty much about being penny wise anyway.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, it's not easy.
How much does it cost to stay on the road for a year?
Or
have you worked it out?
I haven't really worked it out. Like, I'd be a bit scared to work it out, to be honest. Like, I mean, I'd say 20 grand, but that's just plucking a figure out. I mean, I'm lucky in some ways that I got
30 weeks of holidays, effectively, because even though it's not holidays, you're incurring the cost. You've got the travel, you've got the accommodation, you've got the food, because you can't cook at home and you're in a hotel, you have to eat out.
And that's kind
20 grand doesn't seem like an awful lot of money for 30 weeks of that type of living.
Yeah, so it would be more than, I mean,
Is that a worry that you're actually scared to work out the figures of that?
Yeah, it's difficult. Like, you don't really want to know how much you're spending. I mean, you're trying to keep the cost down, obviously. So I mean, I'm home now. I'm doing some clinics in Malahide and Sutton, a couple of places. I've done some in Carrick Mines, and that's like basically pocket money for a few flights. And then, you know, Fitzwilliam, I remember Fitzwilliam. They've been great. They help. They give membership to, if you, the juniors is there, and if you win the juniors or do well as a junior there, they give an honorary kind of membership, and they also have a development fund for the players. So they help the players every year. They'll try and give some money to the players to help travel. Leinster Tennis gave me some support as well, the province. So you're just trying to keep your head above water, really, to be honest.
So when you're on the court, what's actually going through your head? Are you worrying about the game, or in the back of your mind are you thinking, I have to win this game to not have to pay for accommodation tonight?
No, I mean, I wouldn't think about that. I'd try to, as best I can. I know I can't remember ever playing a match away where I've said, I better win because, you know, I need a bed to stay in or something. It's never been like that. I mean, that's not really. I would go ahead and focus on the match, and you know, if I lose, I lose. If I win, I win. I just do my best and see what happens.
Obviously, the ATP is the top for men's tennis.
Yeah.
Below that is the level you're at the moment in terms of challengers, and you reached a semi-final there last year in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
And also then below that is the futures. Tell us a bit about kind of the structure of how those work.
Yeah. Well, the lowest level, as you said, is futures. So, basically you're trying to get world ranking points. So when I get into a futures, if I make the semis of the futures and doubles, I get 10 points, say, and if, you know, my ranking, if it's 500, I might move a couple of spots, and as I go, and then, you know, as my ranking gets better, then, okay, my ranking is better, I can play challengers now. So, and challengers, the points are more, so I can, there's more reward for, you know, if I win my first round of a challenger match, it's 20 points, whereas if I win my first round of a futures, it's 6 points. So it's a big difference.
What level do you have to be at to qualify for challenger events?
It depends on a lot of things, like it depends on how many challengers are on that week. So for example, in I played Johannesburg recently, the cut was maybe 500 combined. So if I'm 250 in the world and I play with you and you're 250, we're 500 combined, so we get in the tournament. Whereas if I'm 300 and you're 300, you know, we don't get in. So it depends on the week. So at the beginning of the year, where there's not many tournaments on, you might only have one tournament in Europe, so the cut would be really difficult and you won't get in. Whereas in June, there's 5 challengers in 1 week in Europe, or 3 challengers and 2 ATP events, so it takes some of the, obviously spreads the players, so it makes the cut a little bit lower. So I played Johannesburg with Dustin Brown, then I lost and I came to Rome, and I was unsure whether I'd get in, but my flight was back there, so I went and signed in, but I didn't get in, because the cut was very high because Rome ATP event was on the next week, so guys were playing that and then going to qualifying for Rome, or, you know, there's some top guys there, so it kind of works on the time of the year, I think, is the best way to explain it.
And then the next step up from challenger to ATP.
Yeah.
You're currently just outside the top 200 for doubles.
Yeah.
Where do you go to? How close do you have to get to number one to actually get into those?
Well, I think I don't know what my ranking is. I lost some points, so I think I'm about 210 or something like that. And I was 180. So I need to be, to be playing tour events, I need to be about 90, I'd say. 80, 90, and like to be playing Grand Slams as well. So,
is that a realistic target?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it was realistic. So, you know, I've beaten guys who are in the top 100, and I've beaten guys between 100 and 200, so I believe I can do it. And the summer is a big opportunity now with a lot of challenges, so I'm gonna go all in and play every week in the summer and just really put my head down and you know, it'd be tough traveling every single week, but this is why I'm home these couple of weeks, to try and, you know, be fresh and get ready to go in those months. So
tennis is a very mental game, because at the level you're at, everybody has the strokes, everyone has the game. It's about really having the mental toughness to overcome the person on the other side of the net, or the pair on the other side of the net.
Yeah.
How strong are you mentally?
I don't know. No, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. It's like you just said, it's very difficult. You know, if I go to a tournament and I lose, you know, I have match point and I lose, and like we were saying earlier about money and stuff, it's difficult to come back, but you just have to pick yourself up and go again, and that's what I've done through my, you know, I had the last couple of weeks, I've had a rough few weeks. I came home, John was trying to get me in the gym here and into the ISI here, and I said I needed a few days off just to kind of recharge, because I was a bit down after the last couple of weeks, but now I'm ready to go again. So it's not easy, but you have to make sacrifices as well, and that's what I've done in my career, and that's what I continue to do. So I was very lucky. I just kind of off topic, in December, like I was saying earlier about guys helping you out, because Ireland doesn't have the pool of players, last year I played with an Indian player, his name's Purav Raja, he's 150 in the world now, maybe even higher actually in doubles, and he asked me to go to India to practice with Bhupathi and Bhopana, who are both, Bhupathi's won 11 slams and Bhopana's, they're top 5 in the world, they made final the O2, so I went there for 3 weeks to practice with them, to try and with their coach, and Purav helped me out, he brought me over there, so I spent 3 weeks in India kind of learning from them and just being with them every day, so I picked up a lot.
How important is it to have a good team, and who are your main people around you, your medical support, your psychology support, your coach?
Yeah, well, coaching, when I come home, I've worked in DCU, work a little bit with Gary when I'm home, but I try and be away as much as I can, obviously, to play as much as I can as well. But when I'm home, Gary is in DCU there. I go and practice in DCU. I go practice in Fitzwilliam. And I have people helping me, like psychologist Kevin Clancy from Cork. So he's helped me a lot. And then today we're in the ISI in Artane. John Connor here is actually me and John go back a long time because he worked with James McGee as well, myself and James McGee. Larry had John in as the physical trainer, so he knows me since I was 15, 16, and he's helped me a lot. And every time I'm home, like, we do a lot of prehab stuff as well, because for tennis, and I'm on the road a lot, that I need to try and keep. I need to play as many weeks as I can. And since I've been working with John, I've, touch wood, I've had no injuries, and he's had me in good nick. So okay. Long may it continue.
When you're on tour, what's in the bag? Let's forget the tennis stuff, the technical stuff for a minute. What's actually in your travel bag?
What's in my travel bag? String, grips, shoes.
No, let's forget the tennis.
Okay.
No technical stuff.
Okay.
What's actually in your travel bag? What do you bring with you? What's must-haves when you're on tour?
Must-haves, I would say my iPad now. Books. I would read a little bit when I'm traveling, but since I actually got an iPad, I've just been watching movies.
On the road 30 weeks a year, it's very hard to maintain personal relationships like that. Are you single?
Yeah.
Putting that out for you here,
find you a nice put thing. My number on the bottom as well.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to get in touch with James, just contact the show.
Yeah.
Are you single by choice, or is it out of necessity? You just haven't met the person, or is it because you're on the road so often?
Yeah, it's difficult. Like, I mean, I've seen a couple of girls when I'm home or gone out. You know, date tonight actually.
You get yourself in a lot of trouble here.
Yeah.
A couple, is it?
No, no. Again, I mean, I don't mean like that, but. It's difficult. I mean, you're always, you know, there's no, if you meet someone that you like and then you go out once and then you're gone away for 6 weeks, I mean, it's obviously not easy. So, but I suppose, you know, you can keep in contact these days with Facebook and all. You know, one guy was saying to me, when he played, there was no Facebook, Skype, all that sort of stuff. So things have improved, you know, you can keep in contact. So, but no, I'm still looking.
And what's the future for yourself? Obviously, 180th in the world before Christmas, just maybe dropped a little bit lower than that now, but
yeah.
Coming into the summer season, what's the plan? What would you be happy with in 6 months time, say end of the season, September, October? What number have you got in your head, or have you
yeah,
got in
your head? Yeah, I mean, with the psychologist, we always talked about setting goals, and I'd be very goal driven. So I mean, I'd like to be in the top 150 at least. So and now, you know, I need to be in the challengers, and I need to be doing, you know, in the business end of the challengers. And I made a couple of semis last year in Kazakhstan, Athens, and you know, won a couple of rounds in different or Turkey. I made semis as well. So this year, now this summer, is the goal is to try and win one. You know, make a couple of finals, because it's obviously the points is big. So that's really the goal. You know.
Yeah. In terms of singles versus doubles, have you given up on the idea of singles?
Yeah, I've given up singles. Like,
why? Explain that to me a little bit, because obviously the sexy end of tennis is the singles. But
yeah,
you're focusing on the doubles.
Yeah, it's
maybe
it's
that's why you're single. Not serious.
I'll ask McGee that actually.
In all seriousness, though, why doubles over singles?
Well, you know, when I was under 18, I won the singles in the juniors, and basically I went to America. I played 4 years in college tennis in America, and I did well in singles. I did okay, but I did very well in doubles. I was ranked 3 in the country in doubles. I made semis of NCAAs in the indoors and the All Americans, it's called, and so my ranking, I was always top 10 in doubles in America, and I was at my highest, I was 3. In singles, I was never ranked high, so it was kind of an easy decision, really. I mean, I wasn't going to come out of college and suddenly be a singles wizard, you know. So doubles was kind of where I saw myself.
But if you're at an event and there's a doubles and a singles event on, you don't even participate in the singles?
No, not I do sometimes. In Johannesburg, I was there early, and I signed in because it's at altitude in South Africa, that tournament. So to get used to the altitude, I signed in to get used to the conditions. But if I'm going to a tournament, no, I wouldn't. If I'm on the road maybe 3 weeks and I, you know, lose early the first week in doubles and I'm there early at the second one, then I'll sign in. But if I feel tired or, you know, I'm not, it's not my goal. I don't have any goals in singles, so.
You've played Davis Cup for Ireland. How big of a moment is that for you in your career?
Yeah, it's always special to play. It's the team aspect, like I spoke about earlier, is very important in tennis because it's an individual sport. And you're with your friends, obviously, and then just
it is kind of strange for an Irish international team to have three guys who grew up in the same school, the same academy at the same time.
Yeah, no, Colin O'Brien wasn't in the same school, but okay. He practiced at the same. But like we all know each other very well, we all practice together. So yeah, but the thing is, with Ireland, is it's such a small pool of players that we all get on very well. So we're all very close, and we all support each other. Like for example, you know, I said I was disappointed the last couple of weeks with my results, you know, in Johannesburg and stuff like that, and Sam Barry was messaging me yesterday. He was like, come on, when are you coming back to practice, get in here, you know. So we're a pretty close group, but Davis Cup is very special, you know. It's, you know, especially I remember when I first started playing tennis and my first coach would say, you know, what's your goals for the year, and we'd write down, you know, I want to improve my serve or my forehand, and then what's your long-term ultimate goal, and it was always to play Davis Cup. So that's, you know, and when you hear the national anthem and all, you know, the build up to the week, and the anthem is special. And
would you swap it for a Grand Slam appearance?
Yeah, I probably would. Yeah. I mean, right now I would. Yeah. I mean,
okay. Well, listen, my guest this week is James Kluski, Ireland's Davis Cup tennis player. It's been great having you on the show. We do allow the guest every week to pick the song that plays us out. What have you picked for us?
Well, I'm a big U2 fan, so I'm going to go with Where the Streets Have No Name.
That's a good tune. Listen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Hopefully we'll have you back again soon. Once you make the main draw of a Grand Slam, we'll be back chatting to you.
I'd love to.
Or maybe before, whatever. This week, obviously, James Kluski, we're going to finish with U2 and The Streets Have No Name.